Ever feel like you're too busy to eat healthy? Meal kits from Sunbasket are the perfect solution. No more meal planning or shopping. Every Sunbasket meal is designed by dietitians and chefs to be healthy, nourishing, and delicious with none of the hassle. You can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy recipes each week, and you can order things like Mediterranean diet, vegetarian, carb conscious, even gluten-free. I love to cook, but some nights having those decisions made for you and so nutritiously with organic fresh produce is fabulous. You can also have pre-made meal options as well that are just as tasty and are ready in 5 minutes or less. Sunbasket takes care of all the hard parts of healthy eating and delivers right to your door. Remember, mental health is directly tied to what you eat or don't eat, and Sunbasket's offer is phenomenal. Go to sunbasket.com/selfwork today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/selfwork to save $120 across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. This is Selfwork, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Selfwork, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. Being there does not mean taking on the struggle as if it were yours. Olivia Newton-John was a singer back in the 1980s, I think, and she had a song called Let Me Be There. Here are some of the lyrics. Let me be there in the morning. Let me be there in the night. Let me change whatever's wrong and make it right. Ugh, that's terrible advice. Welcome to this week's edition of Selfwork. Today, we're focusing on the tools necessary to help you listen and actually be there for someone else. Why is this the topic for this week? I had a client die by suicide recently. I'm not going to go into his story and what obviously went very wrong. I'm putting the pieces of that together slowly, as are the people he loved and who loved him. And I'm working through my own feelings, including, of course, grief. What I am going to focus on is what it's like to listen to the stories of those who trust you to create a safe space for them to talk, and what it means to be there for someone. What's it like to hear things that are very hard to hear, and what it's like to carry on with your own life as you do so. I'm going to offer a list of 11 necessary tools that I've learned to use over the years. What I hope is that that list is helpful to you as you go about the business of loving others and being there emotionally for them. I should say that this episode isn't a substitute for any mental health treatment that you might choose or need. And there were two listener contacts that touched my heart, one an email and one a voicemail. And so just for fun, I wanted to share them with you. Let's hear right now from AG1, which I realize now I forgot to take this morning, so I need to go down and do it. Here's AG1. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality. And that's why for years I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 conducts relentless testing to set the standard for purity and potency. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword, it's a commitment. And at each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they obsess over product quality, the standards of their manufacturing, and sustainable practices. Taking care of your health shouldn't be complicated. And AG1 simplifies this by replacing all those multiple health supplements, like your multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and more, in just one simple scoop. AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for their quality, and I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high-quality product that I drink every day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try it and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/selfwork. Again, that's drinkag1.com/selfwork. Check it out. You'll be glad you did. Being there for someone is a phrase I hear all the time. I want to be there for you, someone might say. Certainly as a therapist, it's my job and my honor to be there for people who come into therapy with me. And I hope I create that feeling for folks. People often tell me how calming my actual waiting room is. Sometimes people come early just to sit in the quiet. I mentioned in the intro that one of my clients killed themselves within the last few weeks, so it's not hard to imagine that I'm asking myself lots of questions about his treatment. What happened that his life seemed to be going much better, and then he ended it. It's a long story, which I won't go into. But what it brought up for me as I sat down to create this episode, we all have differing capacities for empathy, that ability or skill to be able to connect with someone's pain with the hope that they feel supported and understood. Some do this quite easily, where the very idea of this kind of connection, of being there in the moment with someone, scares the living daylights out of others. If you do this easily, then hopefully this episode will highlight what you already know, what you're already doing, and maybe offer other things that might help. But if you can't be there easily for others, here's my message, and I want to state it firmly. Most of the work is in showing up, and you can practice that. And just like anything with practice, you can get better. So let's get started. Here's number one. Ask how they need you to listen. If they've told you already that they need someone to simply listen to them, then do just that and don't problem solve. That's a different kind of listening altogether. It's a common problem that if you're not great at connecting emotionally, then you'll sort of default into problem solving. Let me give you an example. I have a woman client that has become a widow recently. Someone who has been in her and her husband's lives for quite a while called and said, "Now the first thing you've got to do is sell your house." Someone else called and actually said the exact opposite. She didn't need to hear either person. If this is a habit of yours to jump in and give advice, then know that and refrain. If someone needs advice, actual advice, they'll ask you for it. But if what they need is for you to be there, then that's a whole different kind of listening. Number two, show up. A couple of days ago, I watched a new TEDx given by a friend and colleague of my own TEDx coach. I'll have the link for y'all in the show notes. The presenter has been a quiet guy. He's a magician, and he did some magic during the talk. But he'd spent years volunteering as well on a crisis hotline. And here was his major point, and I quote, "So if you don't know how to solve someone else's problems, it can actually be an advantage because then you can simply focus on being there to support them, to listen first." It's a great point. You don't have to know how to solve the problem to listen to someone. Many people can't even begin to problem solve until some of their emotions are expressed. So you don't need to have an answer. You simply can choose, as I said, to show up. But there's a second part to showing up. Many people tell me as well that people show up at first. They bring food, they offer help, they take the kids for a day. But over time, people disappear. So here's a reminder. Show up later. Show up a month after a death, or 2 months after a divorce, or 3 months after someone gets fired. But show up. Number three, let your ego go. There are times in therapy that as I lean forward to hear someone tell their story, I realize that I want to give them a great idea or I want to say the perfect thing. That response, that tendency will only get in your way. What happens is all of a sudden, the session becomes about me, and that's not the way it's supposed to happen. So I literally imagine my ego, my need to please or be helpful. I imagine it floating out into my office yard and staying there. Then I can lean in and not worry what I'm going to say, but truly listen, and you can do the same. You don't have to be this person's best friend, or you don't have to give them the best advice. You don't have to compete with anybody else that's trying to help them. Whatever you have to give is what you have to give. So let your ego go. Number four, honor that you're hearing perspective and ask before you give another perspective. Let's look at this through another example. Let's say your friend find out their partner cheated, and all they can think of right now, all that they're talking about is how it must be their fault. I'm not sexy enough, or I don't make enough money, whatever it is. You don't believe this at all, but you're hearing them say these things. What's best is to just hang in there with them, be there, and comment about how awful that must feel to blame. Normalize that blame. For example, say, there are a lot of people who blame themselves at first. And then, when it's time, ask them if they'd like your perspective on what they're feeling. Now, don't call it the truth. Let me tell you the truth. Not helpful. It's your perspective. If they say yes, then they'd like to hear your perspective, then offer something like, you know, I've read that having an affair, keeping that kind of secret, there's no justification for it. There's a context, yes, but not a justification. They did what they did, and it hurts you and impacts you greatly, but you're not the cause. And if they say no, they don't want your perspective, then you have to do exactly what I say is the next thing. And number five is wait. Part of being there for someone is realizing that it can take time for anger to subside, for sadness to abate, and especially for shock to wear off. How many times have I heard, well, she didn't seem upset at all. I just don't understand it. How could she not be upset? Shock can take minutes or hours or days or weeks to wear off. Shock is protective. It simplifies things. It helps you deal with one thing at a time as those things come to you. It dulls your emotions, or can. People might often say that they remember nothing after some kind of stressor or loss, and other people will be able to give you a documentary version of everything that happened, who said what, when certain things happened. Your job in being there is to try to not cookie-cutter your friend's reactions or responses into what you think they should be or what you think yours might be. Be patient and wait. If it's truly taking too long, then you might suggest someone seek therapy, as they may seem in denial of what's happened. You can use your own judgment on that, but sometimes we forget to wait. So let's take a break. And we'll be back in just a moment. When my mom talked about menopause, she called it the change, and it was all very hush-hush, as if there was something wrong about something so natural. Thank goodness, with mental health awareness and actual research, we're beginning to understand the huge role hormones play in women's bodies. Being postmenopausal has its challenges, but if you're going through either perimenopause or menopause, then I suggest you try Hormone Harmony. Why? Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about them. They help the body adapt to stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. Number six, notice how you're feeling and tuck it away until you have time to process. Being there certainly doesn't mean you're supposed to not have feelings yourself. Of course you will. And it's so important that you work through those feelings yourself. Sometimes being there is crying along with someone. Now, I don't really do that in therapy, although my sadness might show. But it can also mean not being shocked at anything that might be felt or said or inferred. Now, let's touch for a second on the situation where someone that you're trying to be there for actually talks about self-harm. That's a conversation, that's a knowledge that's too much for anyone to handle by themselves. But you don't have to overreact, and you certainly don't want to say, I can't believe that you'd even think about that or say that. Suicidal thoughts are much more common than many people realize, and you can help them not shame themselves for those thoughts. You can even say, "I'm more than concerned that that's the way you feel. Who do you trust to tell, or can I help you find a therapist or a doctor so that you can get the support you need? Let's tell them together," or something like that. Number 7, ask questions to help them go deeper, not the questions that you think you need to know. Now, this is a technique I use a lot with couples who are trying to build better communication skills between them. Let's face it, we often listen to someone, especially our partner, with an agenda, our own agenda. We either can't wait for our partner to stop talking so we can say what we want to, or we think we know exactly what the other person talking is going to say, or whatever. We are far from being there. So this technique calls for one person to be the speaker and the other the listener. The listener's job is to help the speaker go deeper, quote unquote, into the feeling or state of being they're talking about with questions like, "How long have you felt that way?" Questions that will help the speaker dive a bit deeper into that feeling or experience. You don't ask questions like, "Well, do I make you feel that way?" No, that's about you, not them. It's actually very hard to do. We're so accustomed to listening for pieces of information that we can either disagree with, fight back on, support. We're not really truly there. And I've given this example before on self-work, but I'm going to give it again because it's very dramatic. The therapist that actually introduced this concept to me and to many, many others at this workshop said that she ran groups for couples over the weekend. And there was this one couple that had waited until the last to take their turn to try this exercise out. And the gentleman was saying, "Hey, I think I can do this. I've listened to everybody else." And the woman was saying, "I don't think you want to hear what I have to say." And he said, "Give me a chance." So the room got quiet. And she said, "I often wish for your death." And he said, "When did you begin feeling that way?" They went on to have a discussion. And what she ended saying was she didn't really want him to die. She just felt so helpless and lost about the situation that she said, "You know, one of us has to die, and I don't want it to be me." So he understood. They had a great discussion, and they felt much more emotionally intimate because he'd allowed her to go deeper, and then his own understanding was deeper. Number 8, if the person who's talking is becoming too agitated or too distraught, you can help them rein those feelings in. Let's say the person is getting very lost in their pain and you realize you're feeling overwhelmed. You can say that gently. "Wow, I'm feeling overwhelmed by what you're saying. I can't imagine how you're feeling." And help them realize that it's going to take time to sort all of their feelings out. Sometimes being there for someone involves giving them a little hand up out of not how bad they feel, but how long they've been talking and how maybe it's time to take a break. Maybe injecting a little humor if appropriate. Now, this is not saying things like, "Well, it sounds to me like you're getting really lost," or "Do you realize you've been repeating yourself over and over?" You can suggest talking more tomorrow or doing something together that might be helpful. Again, you're not their therapist. So you can also say, "Gosh, these issues may be beyond me to help you with. I can listen for sure, but let me help you find the right kind of help." So you're sort of listening with the idea of, "Gosh, when might it be time to turn down the heat a little bit?" Here's number 9. Remember, there are 11 of these. Notice nonverbal clues. What I mean by this is simply paying attention to what the person's body or their behavior may be saying. Are they sighing a lot? Is their breathing okay? Or do they need to breathe more deeply? Are they clamping down, literally looking like they're about to jump out of their skin? Then you can say those things. You can comment on it. Maybe you say, "You know, maybe we need to take a rest," or, "It's hard for me to know what this nonverbal cue means." You wouldn't call it a nonverbal cue. But as I'm listening to someone, it's often a bit helpful to say, "Wow, that sigh was a deep one." And they know I'm seeing them. I'm seeing what they're saying and how they're saying it. So notice nonverbal clues. Here's number 10. Being there does not mean taking on the struggle as if it were yours. I'm going to repeat that. Being there does not mean taking on the struggle as if it were yours. Olivia Newton-John was a singer back in the 1980s, I think, and she had a song called Let Me Be There. I think she just died recently. Here are some of the lyrics. Let me be there in the morning. Let me be there in the night. Let me change whatever's wrong and make it right. Ugh, that's terrible advice. First, you can't be there night and day. You have your own life, and you can't make anything right. People who believe themselves to be empaths, who experience their lives like that, who have intense empathy with others, so much so that they feel more intensely the pain that others feel, this is a problem for them. They have some trouble maintaining the boundary between themselves and the person who's saying how they feel. And it's not their job to solve their problem or to take on their feelings as if they were your own. So again, I think that's harder in some ways the more intensely empathic you are. But it's so important to remember. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of calling up someone and saying, or texting them or whatever, and saying, I'm so mad about this. And you start talking about what you're angry about. And then they sort of take off with it and go, oh man, that would really piss me off too. And if you thought about doing X, Y, or Z, and man, if this happened to me, I would blah, 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 blah. And you kind of feel like, wait, what happened to my anger? It's become your anger. So you need to remember that you don't want to take it on as if it was your own battle to fight. And then this last one is very important to me personally. And so it's number 11, remind them of their strengths without using platitudes. One of the things that I experienced in grad school as I was learning to be a therapist was that I really didn't particularly care for the models of disorder or how people became mentally ill or how they developed personality disorders. Or I learned those theories. They were important theories to learn, and they were very fancy. Many of them had lots of long words and all that kind of thing. I guess they were made up by very smart people. But I remember talking to my supervisor my last year and saying, you know, what I try to do when someone walks in is realize they're pretty demoralized when I meet them. Their lives are not going well for some reason, and they're asking for help, but I also need to see their strengths. Again, they may not be real evident at the time, but I can listen to their histories and know that they have strengths. It's so important. So you want, as you listen and as you are there, remind this person of their strengths without using platitudes. Now, what's a platitude? Platitude is an easy thing to say that can't really be argued with, but it means nothing really. For example, you could say, you'll get through this. And you may mean well. I mean, I'm sure you do mean well, but it can sound a bit like a platitude. You could say that, and it's not a platitude if you say, you'll get through this because I've seen you do it before. And getting through it doesn't mean not struggling. It's okay to struggle. Now, that doesn't sound like a platitude. Instead, you're reminding them of their strength. They may be demoralized right now, meaning they just can't find their fighting spirit, or they're feeling really like a failure or whatever they're feeling. And it's harder to realize or connect with their strength, but it's still there. We all have strengths. So I hope these 11 suggestions, ideas, offerings, whatever we want to call them, is helpful to you. I'm sure there are others, but this was my list for today. Let me know if you have questions or comments about today's topic. You can email me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com. This listener email just touched me. It really made me smile one morning. She says, I'm a friend of yours without knowing you. I listen to your broadcast just about every day. You make my day remarkable when I needed it the most. It always seems to be the subject of my sadness. Otherwise, I just wanted to tell you, I bought some of your wonderful items with your logo, and I'm going to be proud to show it off. Keep doing what you're doing. Your friend. And she gives her name. That made me so happy. I mean, yes, it's lovely that she bought self-work merchandise, and of course you can too, and I'll have the link to that in the show notes. It's kind of fun stuff. So she's doing her self-work, but the fact that she would think of us as friends, because certainly that's the attitude I want to give all of you. We're all in this together, as far as I'm concerned. And then here's another just friendly listener voicemail.
Dr. Margaret, I just want to tell you that this Southwestern jacket you're wearing in your photo, it's fabulous. It's beautiful. I love it. I would definitely wear that. Thanks for all your hard work. I appreciate you.
I happen to love that jacket as well. My friends, in fact, kid me every winter when I take it out once again. It's about 25 years old. They'll say, here's Margaret's jacket. It must be turning cold. But I love these messages from these two listeners, and I would love to hear from you either with a SpeakPipe voicemail or at AskDrMargaret@DrMargaretRutherford.com. Thank you for listening today. I think I said last week that I'd signed a contract for a second book with New Harbinger. I'll let you know more about that. I know that some of you volunteered to talk with me. And so September is a very busy month, but hopefully in October, I'll be reaching out to you. My TEDx is now almost at 1.2 million views. And the comments keep coming in, and it's the comments that either tear my heart up or make me smile or give me another focus for another book. So thank you for all the comments and the views. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. And of course, once again, thank you for being here. I'm honored. Please take care of yourself, your family, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.